Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. It only takes a few seconds of that iconic drum beat and bass line to know it's Billie Jean. In fact, a little five-year-old girl was around my son, Josh's bass player, started doing that bass run. A little five-year-old girl, Billie Jean, I mean, it's just, we know it, we all know it, and it came to him. I remember Michael sharing as he was driving right near where we're broadcasting from, driving down Ventura Boulevard here, and that bass line, that coming to him. 5 years ago tomorrow, Michael passed and went to heaven, and today we're going to remember Michael. We're going to have a couple guests here that have done more than anyone I know to defend who Michael truly was against attacks, as well as put out there who he is. We're very blessed today to have Deborah Kunisch, who has the site called Reflections on the Dance. My wife's going to join us here in the beginning, and also Tom Mesra, one of my heroes for many years. I'm so honored that he's going to be on the show today. He was Michael's archangel when he was going through the dark night of the soul, and thanks to Tom, he was acquitted and found innocent of all charges. My wife and I just got back from our 30-year anniversary trip, and she has to go in a moment, but she wanted to say hi to all of you listening out there. This is my wife, Sherry, and so you enjoyed our anniversary trip?
Yeah, it was really fun. Saw a lot of beautiful things.
Well, we get pretty sad around here when we come up to this time of Michael's passing. Of course, my son's sad this morning, too, because Rossi, our last name, is the most common Italian surname, and they just lost the soccer game. But we feel a lot more sadness over missing Michael. And I worked as a minister in my young adult years among the disadvantaged. We had a woman that picked people up to come to our services named Wanda in a big church bus, and Wanda's daughter had cancer. And lo and behold, Michael heard about it and invited Wanda and her daughter to Neverland. And it was the highlight of this young girl's life to meet her hero, Michael. That's the kind of person Michael was, huh?
Yes.
Do you remember when, and this is hard to talk about, I've never talked about it, but do you remember when I had that dream, that premonition about Michael's passing? That I'm getting emotional now, but do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. It was around 6 months before, and you came out and said that you knew Michael Jackson was going to die soon, and I said, no way. And you said, no, he is. And then it did happen, and I was just blowing away. Very sad.
Yeah, I get pretty emotional when I think about it. He gave so much to the world, and I think of the scripture that Jesus said about, unless you become as a child. And that verse makes me think of Michael. He had a heart of a child, and that was misinterpreted.
Oh, no.
I'll be back in a moment.
He's really breaking down. He's so sad and crying over the death of Michael. He's trying to gather himself together again. He'll be back in a moment with our guest. Thanks for listening and honoring Michael Jackson today. What a beautiful man he was. Thank you.
Another day has gone.
I'm sorry about that. It's Richard back, and I think we have both Tom and Debbie both on the line here. Let me get to them. I think this is Debbie. Hi, is that you, Debbie, on line one?
I'm here.
Oh, welcome, Debbie.
Hi, Richard.
And I
Thanks
think I
so
have Tom here
me.
On line two. Let me check. Hi,
yeah,
Tom,
hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Richard. Tom Mesra.
Oh, wow, so honored to have you here. You've I think my wife might have mentioned a moment ago, you've been one of my heroes for years, not only for defending Michael, but also for, you've done so much work, you know, for the disadvantaged. I know of your free legal clinics and the church that you've done for people, and thank you so much for what you did for Michael to clear his name.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very honored, and it's always a real privilege to talk to someone who understands who Michael was, because I've never known anybody in my lifetime who was subjected to such vicious attacks and such unfair, distorted views of him. And he was the biggest artist in the world. He was a tremendous humanitarian. He was vulnerable and childlike and humble and decent, and that made him a tremendous target for bad people. I really appreciate the nice things you continually say about him as well, and thanks for having us.
Oh, well, you're most welcome. Maybe we'll start with you and then go to Debbie about maybe just some memories and thoughts and feelings, whatever, you know, on your heart. You want to speak from your heart, Tom, and then Debbie about Michael here as we, hard to believe he's been gone from Earth here 5 years. What are your, you know, feelings about it now?
Well, you know, he was one of the kindest, most decent people I ever met. As I've said before in some interviews, you know, when you enter a case as a criminal defense lawyer, you have to start off very objectively. You know, my approach is always, I don't believe anybody when they believe the prosecution, I don't believe the client, I don't believe the press. I walk in with a clean slate and try and figure things out myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take me very long after a number of discussions with him to sort of walk away from the discussion and shake my head and say, this guy can't do the things they charged him with. He just can't.
Mm.
You know, remember how hideous these charges were. It, you know, charging someone with child molestation is worse than charging them with murder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the just savory nature of the charges. But they did more than just charge him with child molestation. They said that he had taken a cancer-stricken child and plied him with alcohol to, you know, sort of soften him up to be molested. They said that he had organized a criminal conspiracy to abduct children, to falsely imprison a family, and to commit extortion. These are horrific charges. And they tried to make him look like an absolute monster. And, you know, I started talking to him, and, you know, with a professional skepticism, which I bring to every case, and I just started shaking my head saying, this just doesn't seem possible with this kind of person. It just doesn't make any sense. And then I started spending more time with him and digging into the evidence and digging into the prosecution's motives. And I finally concluded, this man is completely innocent. These charges are utterly ridiculous. He made himself a target for unscrupulous people by being very vulnerable and very, very idealistic about, you know, healing the world, focusing on children and their needs, particularly children from the inner city who are surrounded by violence and poverty and sometimes broken families. And by being as decent as he was, while at the same time having the resources he had, the fame he had, and this perception that he was childlike himself, he just became a tremendous target for unscrupulous people. And it made him lonely. It made him distrusting. You know, I've said before that during the trial, in the middle of the night, he would call Susan Yu, my law firm partner and co-counsel, and he would just say, look, you know, I know how well you're doing. I'm not a lawyer, but please don't let them pay you off. They want me to go down. And I would say, Michael, you don't know what kind of a person I am. Nobody's giving me a dime to throw anything. You know, he was convinced that they would try and pay millions to have us basically make sure he was convicted. And I said, Michael, you know, maybe you've been around people like that in your lifetime. I'm not one of them. And Susan, you know, they tell him, Michael, how can you say that? I don't do that kind of stuff. Look at my history. Look at my background. Look at my values. But the poor fellow just was taken advantage of so often and paid a price for his kind, humble, decent heart. He really did. But I remember him as a wonderfully kind, generous, decent person. you know, shortly after I agreed to represent him, my only sibling, my sister, came down with terminal cancer, a tumor in the lung and a tumor in the brain. She first had the brain tumor removed. It looked very successful. She went home. She found a bouquet of flowers larger than her door. She couldn't imagine where these flowers came from. She'd never seen anything like it. There was a little note. She opened the envelope, and it was a poem to her from Michael.
Wow.
And she called me up just confounded. She couldn't believe it. And the person he was, in the middle of his darkest hour, you know, when terrified and frightened of what these people were trying to do to him with this criminal indictment and this criminal trial coming up, in the middle of his darkest hour, he found the time to do this for my sister.
Wow.
Now, this is the
Wow, that's so touching to hear that, Tom. And I had no idea about him being concerned someone would buy you guys off. I know you're the type of lawyer with integrity, but of course that would never happen. And by the way, if you know, just for those of you out there, if you're ever, a lot of good people like Michael sometimes find themselves accused by the system falsely, and this is one of the greats. You know, you need someone like this in your corner. And the website for Tom, I'll spell it for all of you out there, because we have a lot of, you know, just celebrity friends and artist friends, and sometimes, you know, you need someone like this. God forbid that you need an advocate like this, but when you do, his website is meserau, for his partner, SusanYu.com. Or if you Google Tom Mesereau, I'm sure you'll find it. And Debbie's website, which is just a work of art, just was put up and revamped recently with a lot of new stuff. That's the definitive site for me on Michael, is reflectionsonthedance.com. And, yeah, speaking of Debbie, wow, thank you for, you know, reaching out to Tom and bringing him into this discussion, and for all you've done, Debbie. What are your feelings now hit the five-year anniversary?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you very much for everything you just said, and happy 30th anniversary, by the way.
Awesome.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And,
hi, Debbie.
Hi. Pardon me?
Oh, I said happy anniversary also.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Tom.
it's funny. I mean, hearing you become emotional, Richard, it's funny. I've found myself being a lot more emotional recently about it, and I kind of thought I had gotten to the point where I wasn't going to get emotional anymore. As you had mentioned, I just revamped the whole homepage of the site, and it was just something that kind of came about through a couple different events, and I thought, you know, I really have to bring this up to speed. There had been so many things that I had learned through the 5 years, you know, the past 5 years, that were not on the site originally because they just came through time. And, it's hard to think about all the things that he went through. You know, as Tom was just mentioning, it just seemed, as most people know, I had never met Michael, never spoke with him. And for me, the process of creating the website was sort of a spiritual thing. It came about through different comments I was hearing right after his death. And I thought, you know what, I've got to show people this isn't right. I knew in my heart that what was being said wasn't right. And I'm sorry, I got to go back to what I was just saying. So as I remember all these different things, and I think with doing this five-year, revamping the site and having it come out, you know, right before the five-year anniversary, I had to sort of relive all those different things again, because in order for me to create a site like that, I kind of opened myself up, and I feel like I try to listen to what God wants me to put on there, because that's the only way that I can honestly portray someone that I never met. And then I also speak to people who did know him, like Tom and others who have insight into him. And so I feel a lot of sadness coming up to it, but I also feel like I've learned so much from him and from studying him and feeling as if, you know, he was just so helpful and kind to other people. It makes me rethink how I treat others. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons from his life, and that's something that I put into the site as well, is how, you know, treat others as you would want them to treat you. And that's just, he went around and he lived that. And what the media showed was so opposite that.
Well, you know, it seems to me, of course, you know, we've always loved and believed in Michael, and I believe in the kind of biblical definition of friendship. Proverbs 17:17 says, a true friend loveth at all times. So when someone's going through what he's going through, you know, someone like Tom and the way he stood by Michael, that's to me a true friend. But as far as the fair-weather friends of the public, it seems to me, thankfully, that the PR or the public image of Michael has really turned around now. Before he passed, there was a lot of the wacko jacko and the bad accusations, but it seems like his heart, his music, his art is carrying the day now, and the positive is more in the public consciousness now. I don't know if that's just me. I mean, what do you think, Tom and Debbie? Maybe I'd like to hear from you, Tom, and also Debbie. Do you feel like the public image is now going back to more positive now?
I really do. I was told recently that he has more fans around the world now than ever before. And I think the trend is to emphasize the positive and not the the nasty, exploitive publicity that many people try to capitalize from. You know, every once in a while, there's going to be a blip. You know, you've got this pending civil suit with Wade Robson and Jimmy Safechuck that's utterly ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. But that may rear its head at some point. But nevertheless, I totally agree with you. I think the trend is very strongly in favor of the positive and recognizing him for not only being one of the world's greatest artists in many different areas, choreography, song, you know, musical creation, dance. You know, he never took a dance lesson. Fred Astaire said he was the best dancer he ever saw. as well as his enormous humanitarian action things. And I think less on the eccentricities and you know, I think the ability to exploit him, I hope, is diminishing. Because I don't think the world really wants to hear that stuff anymore. He was totally exonerated in his criminal case. Yes, people are continually trying to live off that exploitation if they can, but I think their opportunities are fading fast.
I was just crying when I saw the doves. I think there was a woman there with the doves, if I remember right, and I remember the doves flying as they just read one after another. They read the charge, not guilty, the next charge, not guilty. I think, what was it, like 10 charges or so, not guilties?
There were 10 felony counts that he was indicted on by a grand jury, but at the end of the trial, the judge allowed the jury to consider four, in addition to the 10 felony counts, what they call four lesser-included misdemeanors. So the jury said not guilty 14 times.
Wow.
10 felonies. It was a complete debacle for the prosecution and, in my opinion, a complete exoneration and vindication of Michael Jackson.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm so glad you were in his corner. How about you, Debbie? Do you also feel a turnaround? I know you get hit with negative stuff because of your wonderful site. There's always those few kind of people out there that as Tom said, once in a while you get a bad blip about Michael, and you've been on the front lines with your site as well. Do you feel this switch that we're feeling, that it's people remembering the good that he left behind?
Yeah, definitely. I especially since, you know, I think it, when he died, you know, I think there was that, you know, that kind of global outpouring of grief, and even people that, you know, I heard from so many people that said, my gosh, I was never a fan before. I don't have any interest in celebrities. I didn't even listen to his music. But when he died, all of a sudden, I felt needed to find out everything I could about him, and that's what led a lot of people to my site originally. And so that, you know, I definitely feel there's a definite shift. Like you said, there still are times that, you know, or like Tom had mentioned as well, that, you know, there's going to be people that are going to keep trying to tried to take away the effect of his legacy and his memory and the message that he had. But I definitely feel there's a difference. There's not as much negative going around. I don't think there's as many haters. And I think people are learning to appreciate, and I think people are learning the truth. you know, people are starting to come around. And it, even with these allegations that recently came out with Wade Robson and Jimmy Safechuck, I think people are, even the public who originally believed he was a molester, are coming to realize this is ridiculous. You know, they're seeing these people come out after years and years of saying, no, you know, he never did anything to me, and all of a sudden coming out to make a claim. And I think it's starting to make the wheels turn in people's heads where they're realizing there's something else to this. This is not, you know, maybe this guy was innocent. I think it's changing the way people view him.
That's a really good point. I mean, you know, I think I know Wade Robson, I think even in the prior trial, or at least in the press, he said that Michael would never do anything like that, and now that he's dead and not here, I mean, didn't he, Tom, maintain that Michael never did anything like that in the past vehemently?
Well, absolutely, and he was my first witness in our defense case. Mm-hmm. And when a criminal defense lawyer in the middle of a trial decides to put on a defense case, which you're not obligated to do, you can rely strictly on cross-examination of prosecution witnesses if you want, but I decided that we had to put on a defense case as well because I really wanted to see him walk out of there with total exoneration. Mm-hmm. I didn't want the jury to hang or there'd be any hung counts because they would have retried him again. And
yeah.
I don't know if he threw a retrial. So I decided to take my chances and put on a defense case even after I felt our cross-examination of their witnesses had gone very well. And when you put on a defense case, you want to start strong and end strong. I started with Wade Robson, I ended with Chris Tucker, and I did that because they were two of our strongest witnesses. And Wade Robson was, you know, a very intelligent, articulate young man. I called he and his mother and his sister, all of whom were supporting Michael, none of whom believed anything improper had ever happened. And Wade was adamant on the witness stand, you know, Ron Zonin, the best prosecutor in the case, just went after him with, you know, hammer and tongs. And at one point, Robson, as I recall, looked and said, you know, these claims are ridiculous. And he really said it like he meant it. So I was in utter shock when I heard he had changed his position and went on the Today Show and said that he had been the victim of misconduct. I was in shock.
Well, it seems like since Michael's death that the Michael Jackson estate has just really prospered with, you know, the Vegas show and Michael's death, like Elvis and others, you know, records, you know, going to the top like never before. I guess there's a lot of, I don't know, I'm not God, I can't read someone's motives, but it seems like there's such a mercenary motive for those that all of a sudden are going after the estate right now, huh?
Well, absolutely, and I think what opened Pandora's box was the 93 settlement with Jordy Chandler and the settlement short after with Jason Francia, which, you know, was kept pretty silent until the criminal case. When I first got in the criminal case, I knew about the Chandler settlement because it had been highly publicized. I didn't know there'd been a second one with Jason Francia. And I think what happened was Michael was advised that he had bigger fish to fry and that this money was going to be a pittance by comparison with what he could make if he got these cases behind him. And I don't think it turned out to be great advice because it opened the floodgates to other civil suits. Suddenly security guards at Havenhurst sued him, security guards at Neverland sued him.
Mm-hmm.
Word got out, why work if you can sue Michael Jackson in a civil courthouse? And, you know, one concern I have is that when he settled that Jordy Chandler case, his lawyers were John Branca, Howard Weitzman, the Katten Muchin law firm, which Weitzman was a partner with at the time. And then when they settled the Jason Francia case, it was the Katten Muchin firm again. And these are the same lawyers that are representing the estate. So my concern is that I think the lawyers representing Wade Robson and Jimmy Safechuck are aware that the lawyers on the other side have a history and a background of settling these cases. I'm told Weitzman and Branca are blaming Johnny Cochran for it, but that's easy to do because he passed away. The reality is that if you read Randall Sullivan's book, Untouchable, he does report that John Branca, who was not a litigator, he was his music lawyer, felt that Michael didn't have the emotional and physical strength to make it through a trial. And Howard Weitzman signed that settlement agreement, was present at a press conference, which you can find on the Internet. It's also contained in David Guest's documentary, which I think is wonderful, Michael Jackson, The Life of an Icon. It's my favorite documentary on the life of Michael Jackson. You'll see the press conference with Howard Weitzman standing next to you know, Jordy Chandler's lawyer. And so now I think they realize it was not great advice, and they're trying to blame the deceased Johnny Cochran for it. But the reality is that they have a history of sort of bending and folding their tent and settling these cases for money. I think that if a judge doesn't throw this case out, I think Brenk and Weitzman are going to probably pay money to settle it and make it a confidential settlement like they did before. That would be my guess, which, you know, if the word got out they paid money for this, I think it'd be another, you know, bad measure. But I'm not involved in that suit. I don't represent the estate. I'm not part of the estate. I don't advise them. But that's the concern I have at present. Mm.
Yeah, that makes sense, because the public tends to, unfortunately, think if you do a settlement, that's an admission of guilt without factoring being in Michael's shoes and how tired and how he's being advised a certain way. And, of course, he was very not in great shape during the trial where you represented him, but thankfully you pushed through to get the exoneration. And, you know, I'm so grateful you did that, Tom. And Debbie, I'm so grateful for your site as well, reflectionsonthedance.com. And, Debbie, what...
Thank you.
What's your feelings about what Tom's sharing as a person who's managing this wonderful site?
I have the same concerns as Tom mentioned. I mean, if they were to settle, it's going to look like there was guilt. It's going to look like, well, we think that he must have done what Wade said he did, so we're going to pay him off, and that's how the public would perceive it most likely. Which would be a major downfall to his legacy and to his reputation. You know, I think that's the thing. You know, and he's not here to speak for himself. He can't defend himself in this time. So, you know, that I wholeheartedly agree. That would be my concern. Is that and then once you do that, it opens up for a bunch of other people to say, well, you know, look, this guy won this money, well, why don't we try it? You know, so it, I wholeheartedly agree.
We have listeners go ahead, Tom.
I had to deal with those settlements in the criminal trial. To my surprise, the trial judge, Judge Melville, allowed the prosecution to bring in as evidence to the jury the fact that Michael had settled the Chandler case and the Jason Franzia case. Mm-hmm. So I had to deal with those cases, you know, in my defense. And, of course, Chandler's mother testified. Francia himself testified. So the prosecution were hoping that the fact that Michael settled those cases would help convince them that he was guilty of molesting, Mr. Arvizo. So they haunted him, I think, from the time the ink was dry in those settlements, they haunted him for the rest of his life. I think if the estate did pay money, they would want it to be confidential, and both sides would agree it's confidential, they can't tell anyone, and then they would dismiss it. But the word still might get out, like it got out in with the Chandler and Francia matters, you know.
Mm.
So I'm just concerned that the plaintiff's lawyer, who was the lawyer for Robson and Safechuck, is looking at who's on the other side and looking at their history and saying, you know, just hang in there, that we're going to get a big chunk of money out of it.
Mm. Well, I tell you, Einstein said time is relative. When you're doing something great, it flies by, but when you're sitting on a hot radiator, it goes slow. And I can't believe we're coming to our final minute here. How about some closing, well, since you're a lawyer, one of the greatest lawyers in legal history, how about a closing statement just on this acknowledgement of Michael's passing from you, Tom, and then also, Debbie, a closing word from you?
Well, thank you very much, and again, it's been an honor and privilege to be on your show. Listen, Michael was humble, he was kind, he was generous, he was sensitive, intuitive, he was decent. He was one of the greatest artists and the greatest humanitarians ever. But if you watched him up close in his personal life and you saw the love he showered on his children, the love he showered on other children from poverty, from violence, who came to visit Neverland, the love he showered on his animals, and his love for nature and the beauty of the universe. He often used the term magic. He felt that life was magical and the world was magical, and we had to focus on the positive. He left a lasting legacy of kindness and decency and generosity, as well as an enormous legacy in the artistic realm. So we lost a wonderful person, but I feel so blessed by God that I got a chance to meet him. It was his darkest hour. It wasn't a happy time period, but I feel blessed that I was able to meet him and play the role in his life that I did. And we lost a wonderful person when he died 5 years ago.
Well, I know I've said it before, but we're eternally grateful he had someone like you in his corner. And I don't think he would have survived that epic spiritual assault had he not had you as his archangel at that time, Tom. And how about you, Debbie, some closing words?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and I agree with what you just said, Richard. Thank you so much, Tom, for doing that for Michael. And I agree with everything that's been said here. As I said, I didn't personally know him, but just from, I think if people get to know who he really was, stop listening to the media, stop listening to all the stuff that's out there, and delve into who this man was, they're going to really learn something, and that's what Reflections on the Dance is all about. It's about his Michael Jackson, the human being, the person. He was a wonderful, amazing artist, but get to know the human being, get to know his message, get to know what, you know, who he was inside, why the things that you saw, why they were, you know. And once there's always, you know, if you to have once you understand someone's story, everything makes sense, and then you start to see that how the media twisted all that to make him become somebody that he absolutely was not, and that they had a majority of the world believing at one time. So that would be my, you know, my thing is just, you know, if you want to know who this man was, go to reflectionsonthedance.com. That's why I redid the whole site again, just to give, you know, an even clearer picture now that I have more more knowledge 5 years later, and learn, you know, learn about what he did, learn about the things that Tom was just mentioning, all the humanitarianism, how he cared from his heart, what kind of human being he was, and what he gave to this world.
Well said, Tom and Debbie, and thank you, everybody, for listening. By the way, this is a link that is perpetually good. In other words, you can hear this show in perpetuity now, and share this link, because I think this is a very important show. And on Debbie's site, she has interviews with Tom and some of the legal work that he did, so you can really look at the facts. And reflectionsonthedance.com. Tom's site is Mesro U, his name, and then YU for his partner SusanU.com, and also his ministry of the Free Legal Clinic is MesroFreeLegalClinic.com. Well, we'll go out with appropriately the wonderful song that Michael did called "You Are Not Alone," and God bless each and every one of you. Go with God and be blessed. Thank you for tuning in.